We're joined now by Dr. Michael Salla, a pioneer in the development of exopolitics. He's the author of several books, the most recent being Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life. Dr. Salla was an assistant professor, researcher in residence at the School of International Service at American University. He has a PhD in government from the University of Queensland, Australia, and is the founder of the Exopolitics Institute, a nonprofit organization that analyzes the political implications of the extraterrestrial presence. Michael, thanks for being with us. Sorry about the mix-up last time and the power outage.
Hello, George. I'm glad to be here, and hopefully the power will work for us this time.
Yeah, we've got backup generators this time. I tell you, I go into this interview with a good reason to not like you, and that's because you live in Hawaii, and that makes me pretty envious.
Well, you know, I can't say anything bad about Hawaii. The wonderful beaches here and the chance to just get in that water during the winter is great.
Oh, you're killing me. Well, let's jump right into it. Exopolitics. You know, in the introduction, we describe it as this analyzing the political implications of the extraterrestrial presence. I guess it's pretty tough because you only got one side of it, right? Nobody's talking to any extraterrestrials. So you just got to analyze it from the Earth side.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, that's my background. I mean, I was teaching international politics, and so I was very interested in just understanding what happens at a conventional political level. And so when I got interested in the extraterrestrial court issue, I just applied very similar processes to understanding extraterrestrial life and the various testimonies people had. So it was really just extending international politics to a kind of bigger realm.
And when you founded this thing, where did you hope it would take you?
Well, I was really seeing, and I still do, as really the new discipline that will emerge from a kind of political science perspective. I mean, that's my background, and that's something I'm still very interested in, is eventually helping universities deal with this issue in a serious way. And when you think about it, you know, what would be a term that universities would use to describe this? I mean, there's things like exobiology and astrobiology, but I think when it comes to the political aspects, exopolitics kind of strikes me as the one that's going to be the one that takes off eventually.
So you would hope at some point that it would be taught as a course in universities.
Oh, yeah. I mean, eventually it will be. I mean, I remember talking to the dean at the School of International Service at American University when I just after I watched Dr. Greer's Disclosure Project press conference. And, you know, I told him about it and my interest in it. And, you know, he kind of wished me well and said, well, if it turns out, it'll be the biggest thing to kind of hit international politics and the university. So, I mean, he understood. Once this issue breaks, I mean, once it turns out that governments are doing policy in the background concerning these issues, then universities will study this with great interest.
I want to jump into the area of disclosure, which is sort of the central focus of what we're going to be talking about tonight. You understand, you've been around ufology long enough to know that everything in ufology is controversial, that somebody, no matter what you say, is going to disagree with it and fight tooth and nail, fight to the death. To oppose it. So you must have heard a lot of criticism since being sort of on the cusp of this disclosure movement, talking about the possibility of spilling the beans in Washington. Give me a sense of what the reaction has been in the mainstream UFO hierarchy since you've come out with this.
Well, it didn't really help all that much that I really wasn't that aware of ufology as a movement, funny enough. I mean, I watched the Stephen Greer's Disclosure press conference, and so I heard all those whistleblower testimonies, and so I was very interested from the beginning in what these whistleblowers had to say about basically a political cover-up. So that's what I kind of launched my energies into, understanding the political cover-up. And somewhere along the track, I suddenly discovered these people that were kind of studying lights in the sky and doing all sorts of quantitative methodological studies of the lights and, you know, understanding various aspects of that. And, you know, I was kind of a latecomer to that, and I guess they didn't appreciate the fact that I was taking as credible a lot of whistleblowers that they felt were not credible, you know, people like Philip Corso and Robert Dean and Clifford Stone that I thought, you know, were people with solid kind of military backgrounds who were worth listening to. I mean, they just kind of like, you know, picked holes in their backgrounds or in their testimonies and said, well, you know, these are people that aren't credible. And so, you know, why are you listening to them? Why are you kind of building this political analysis based on their testimonies? And so it kind of got off to a rocky start. But, you know, over the years, I've learned to kind of appreciate the work of the ufologists. And I think I'm incorporating more of that now. So maybe there'll be less criticism.
And you do get invited to speak at these events, right?
Well, that's right, yeah. So the most recent was the International UFO Congress at Laughlin, and that was a really good event, well organized, and it was a good opportunity to just present my most recent research on the Eisenhower, evidence for Eisenhower being involved in some secret meetings and dealings concerning extraterrestrial life. So, and they were very open and receptive to that, as they have been during earlier presentations.
How certain are you that disclosure is going to happen? I mean, is that's where you are, right? That's what you believe?
Yeah, I always view disclosure as a process. I mean, to me, disclosure happened back in 2001 with the press conference, because that, for me, was disclosure. I mean, that just kind of changed my life from a pretty conventional kind of academic doing the kind of international politics approach to one where I was very convinced that these whistleblowers were telling the truth, at least as much as they believed it. And as I dug deeper and I found more corroborating evidence and testimony and documents, you know, I was convinced that, yeah, this was real. But I think it's a process where everyone goes through their own way of familiarizing themselves with the literature, with the stories. You know, it may, you know, for, you know, just watch this Escape to Witch Mountain. For some people, you know, that might open up their eyes, and all of a sudden they'll start watching some online videos. So I think disclosure is a process, because, you know, we are a kind of collective, and you know, what happens, whether it's at a university level, the mass media or the kind of Hollywood, you know, all of these things help to kind of open people's minds up to a different way of looking at the extraterrestrial issue.
You know, maybe the right word is not disclosure. Maybe the right word is acknowledgement. Acknowledgement of a ET or alien reality by President, Congress, the government in general. We're going to jump into that part of the discussion when we come back after this break with our guest, Dr. Michael Sala. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Dr. Michael Sala is our guest. He's the author of Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life. He is the founder of the Exopolitics Institute, and we're discussing the possibility of disclosure, or perhaps a better word is acknowledgement. Michael, you think to some extent a lot of this stuff has been disclosed. What's it going to take for it to actually officially sort of register?
I think it has to reach some kind of critical mass in the consciousness of people. I think a lot of people have come across things, you know, whether it's newspaper articles or some television documentary, History Channel, friends, people that they may have talked to about incidents. It's just kind of take a certain number of people to all of a sudden just kind of accept that this is very real, and it has powerful political consequences, and then I think we'll have Congress eventually looking into this. But I think Congress will never act unless there's a sufficient number of people that are mobilized. I mean, political institutions like the U.S. Congress are very reactive. I mean, they're very rarely proactive, and unless you have enough constituents kind of beating on the door saying, you know, something's got to be done, they're not going to do anything. But I think it's a gradual process, and it's slowly happening.
Do you believe that at some point, as many of your colleagues do, that at some point in the near future, President Obama or somebody in the administration is going to make a statement about UFOs or the reality of UFOs?
I think that there's going to be some developments in that regard. I'm not quite sure how it's going to happen. I think he's appointed some really interesting people to key positions. Of course, Hillary Clinton was involved in the whole Rockefeller initiative, and he actually was briefed by Rockefeller in 1995 at the Teton Ranch, and she's obviously a key official in his administration. Dennis Blair, who's the Director of National Intelligence, also has some background in terms of the ET issue, because he was the commander of the Pacific Command out here in Hawaii, and during that time, I actually have heard that he was very familiar with the whole UFO issue in terms of the underwater submersible objects, and they were very interested in tracking these objects, and Blair is very familiar with that issue. And there are others, for example, Panetta, CIA director, was also involved with the Rockefeller Initiative, not in any direct way, but at least knowledgeable about it. So I think there is a number of people there that might kind of allow things to move in a direction where disclosure becomes more likely. I think Obama isn't going to strike out on his own. I think he's got a team around him, and I think he's going to use that team to get things out.
Well, we'll talk about the politics of it, the practical politics of it, in a little bit. I just would get your view on what it would be like. I mean, would it be the president calling a news conference, or what kind of scenarios could you envision the disclosure taking?
Well, I think there'll probably be a process of, for example, there'll be a period of openness. You know, the government of policy moves from kind of being very skeptical, and you know, the constant refrain of government agencies, you know, that we have no evidence of anything relating to the UFO issue being real and so forth, to one of openness, the kind of approach that other countries like Britain and France have, that, well, you know, there is a lot of very real data out here, that we acknowledge that this data is credible, and we don't understand it, we don't have an explanation. And I think that'll be very important, this kind of period of openness, just to kind of get people ready for what comes down the track. And then I think they'll move in a graduated series of steps to get people up to speed, prepare them for the big announcement. You know, things like, they found fossil microbes on Mars, and then moving on to some of the bigger stuff.
All right. Other than the presence of these Clinton holdovers who are said to be somewhat sympathetic to the topic, knowledgeable about the topic, are there any other signs that you see that these things are happening, that preparations are taking place to get ready for this kind of thing? Because I would think that it would take a lot of preparation, a lot of steps to build up to it and get ready for it.
Exactly, yes. Well, I was very encouraged by Obama's two memoranda that he issued on his first full day in office on January 21st. First was the memorandum on open government and transparency. And the second was the memorandum on Freedom of Information Act. And so both of those really had the signature of John Podesta, who was the co-chair of his transition team. And I think part of the rationale for those memoranda was to basically make government more open. And I think those that were in the Clinton administration and we were familiar with efforts by Bill Clinton to get information on UFOs, realized how difficult it is, even for a president, to get his hands on material that where he doesn't have a need to know. And so I think that the people behind Obama have prepped him for what he needs to do if he really wants to make a difference on things. I think also another really important step that Obama has taken is with his directive on the National Security Council, restructuring the National Security Council, putting it under greater oversight of General Jones, who's his National Security Advisor. And to me, that's a really key development, because it means that the National Security Council will now have a much greater role in oversight in the nebulous national security system, and especially when it comes to these government contracting, where you have these corporations taking over various contracts to supply goods and services to various government entities, that the National Security Council will now have a greater oversight role in that. And that's very encouraging. And I think one of the steps that has to be taken if we're going to move towards disclosure.
You mentioned something before we went to the break and kind of slipped it in real fast in a sentence about maybe it'd be something like Escape to Witch Mountain, this new movie that's out. It sort of deals with Area 51 and aliens and things of that sort. Are you talking about some sort of a conditioning program through mass media that has been talked about in UFO circles for a long time?
Oh, yes, I think we're really in the midst of that. I mean, we're just having more movies coming out with an extraterrestrial element to it, UFO element to it. Even a lot of the kids' cartoons now have UFOs, extraterrestrials in there. some of the promotions for the upcoming movies. I mean, this kind of monsters versus extraterrestrials, just kind of like putting new ideas out there amongst the kids. And, you know, and I think if you're kind of like playing a role in trying to condition a society, the way you would do it would be you would target kids, because once you get kids interested in this thing, it forces adults to be interested, because adults have got to take them out to the movies, buy the toys, kind of like help them understand issues. And so I think this Escape to Witch Mountain is just part of this gradual conditioning that we're witnessing.
On purpose, though? I mean, couldn't it just be a hit movie that's a remake of what was a pretty popular movie before, and it's released because it will make a lot of money?
Well, and it's interesting. I noticed that it was the top box office rater for Disney over the weekend. It took in $25 million, which made it number one.
Yeah.
And I think that's just one more sign that these movies are very, very popular. Movies with an ET element in there, that people are interested in them. And so that's, you know, it's kind of like a chicken and an egg thing. What comes first, disclosure or kind of, critical mass in the consciousness? And I think we're kind of getting to that point where, you know, people are just becoming more interested. They want to read more, be entertained more about these ET themes. And I think overall we're kind of getting closer to that critical mass. And so things like this Escape to Witch Mountain are just part of that process.
There's a place at which the movies and the presidential politics sort of intersect, and that was the famous story about Ronald Reagan and Steven Spielberg, and Reagan whispering something to Spielberg at the White House screening of E.T. the Extraterrestrial. You know that story, of course, right?
Yes, I've heard of that.
And you believe it's true?
Well, yeah, I see no reason for Steven Spielberg to make that up. I mean, I think it was relayed by a UFO researcher whose name escapes me, but essentially Reagan was just disclosing that there are themes in this in the whole kind of Hollywood promotion of the ET issue, which are very true. And so I wouldn't see why something like Escape to Witch Mountain, and actually, you know, watching that movie and the way they depicted the scenes, I mean, there are so many themes in there that are fairly close to the truth as far as I'm able to tell.
Okay, the idea would be, though, that somebody would have had to brief Reagan on this program, or the truth, or the reality, or the hidden bodies, or saucers, things of that sort. Do you think that there is something like that, that there's an effort that a president at some point gets a briefing somewhere?
Well, that's a really important issue. To what extent was someone like Reagan briefed? I think Reagan did receive a briefing of some kind. His comments, I mean, he was making comments throughout his administration, and I think Colin Powell was his minder to basically try to kind of get him to not pop the kind of ET issue into every speech. But apparently Reagan was determined to kind of put out there, you know, his idea that somehow ETs were a threat that could unite humanity. And he said that enough times to kind of make people suspect that, well, he had been briefed. And there have been those that have claimed that Reagan was briefed. But certainly just his comments to me suggest that he was briefed to a certain extent.
I guess the main question would be, briefed by whom? Who has the secrets? Who's the keeper of the secret files? We'll jump into that with Dr. Michael Sala when we come back after these messages. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking about acknowledgement, disclosure, affirmation of the ET reality, whether or not our government is preparing to spill the beans, so to speak. Our guest is Dr. Michael Sala. You know, we have a mutual associate, a colleague, Whitley Strieber, who's been a guest on this program many times, who told me in an interview about 20 years ago, you know, it's the visitors that are the true architects of the secrecy, because if they wanted to, they could land on the White House lawn. They could do something to demonstrate the reality of their presence, if in fact they're here, in an unambiguous way, but they don't. They choose to give us brief glimpses here and there. And maybe our government has picked up the cue from them, and it only lets out little dribbles of information every once in a while. When we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Michael Sala about if somebody really does have the secrets, a whole room full of data, who are they? And where is this information? We'll be right back. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. My guest is Dr. Michael Sala, founder of the Exopolitics Institute, author of a new book, Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life. Dr. Sala, before the break, we were talking about the possibility of someone briefing the president about this information, spilling the beans to him, so to speak. Do you have any idea, and if you do have an idea, what is the proof for that? What is the source of your information about who might perform that briefing?
Well, I think in the case of President Obama, it would definitely be the person in charge of his daily briefings, which is the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair. And I think Dennis Blair is someone who in the past had a need to know, because he did occupy a position in the U.S. Navy as the commander of Pacific Command, which basically had oversight of all of the military forces in the Pacific theater. And so during that tenure, he would have had access to whatever it is that is of great concern or interest to the Navy. And I think that he would be familiar with these issues. And so if it's decided at some time that President Obama will be briefed, then I think it would be Dennis Blair. But as to who makes that decision, you know, who makes the decision that a president will be briefed or not, that I assume would be made by those that are ultimately in control of all of the information and the ones that actually determine who has need to know. Because the need to know access is the critical thing here, because it doesn't really matter what rank or what position one occupies in government. It's really someone makes a determination whether a person has need to know access, and if they do, then they're given the information, and if they don't, then they can't get to it.
Well, I guess again the question is, who has the information? Are you saying it's military that would have it, or the CIA that would have it, and then somehow they call a meeting and decide that President Obama is ready to go, we can tell him now, or is it something outside the government, an MJ-12 type organization? What do you think?
Yes, I think it is an MJ-12 organization that historically evolved out of government, but became more intertwined with the corporate sector. And I think there were some very good reasons that they chose to do that. Basically, what that has led to is a kind of quasi-governmental transnational entity now that makes these sorts of decisions as to who has access and who doesn't. And it's also, I think, taken a lot of the key information out of the public, out of the military hands, and put it into a kind of more corporate environment so that it's harder to get access to it. Because I think we need to keep in mind that you know, there are things like Freedom of Information Act, and people make the assumption that when the military or government agencies respond that they have no information about the kind of UFO files that have been requested, that while, you know, the government agencies are lying about it, that they've got them hidden away. But I think that they may well be telling the truth, that in fact that the most interesting files are the ones that UFO researchers, exopolitics researchers are most interested in, have been taken out of the government military sector and placed into corporate archives. And that's where I think most of the secrets now lie.
I remember something called the Bolander Memo that Stan Friedman has written about at the end of Blue Book. This Bolander, General Bolander, put out this memo that basically said any case, any UFO case involving national security will continue to be handled in the same way it was handled before, you know, meaning it goes somewhere else. But we don't know where that somewhere else is. Right?
Right. Well, I think I don't recall when the Bolander memo came out, but I assume it's referring to the processes that were initially set up under Truman and Eisenhower.
Yeah, this would have been 69, right at the end of, I think it was right when Blue Book ended is when that came out.
Oh, well, that's very, very interesting, because I know that Ben Rich made some interesting comments about 1969 was when there was a transition in terms of control of the files, that they moved from the military control into corporate control, that Ben Rich made that comment to a fellow researcher, and Ben Rich, of course, as Lockheed Skunk Works director, I mean, he would have had access to some of this information. So I think he was probably referring to some some transition in terms of the control where the military had less.
Oh, well, that's interesting timing. Let's talk about Obama. You know, your colleague, your friend and colleague, Stephen Bassett, who also has been on the show many times, and I've talked to him in person about this. He thinks that disclosure is going to happen, that Obama's the guy, that all the pieces are in place. If we don't do it, meaning the U.S. government doesn't do it, then the other governments will. Do you think that Obama's had that briefing yet, or he hasn't been there long enough? And I know this is just guesswork, because I don't think you have any solid information either way, do you?
At this stage, the only thing I have is someone that I have been in contact with through a group of New York-based researchers. Is a serving U.S. Navy officer who has been giving us information about what's been happening behind the scenes concerning alleged meetings at the UN, and he, according to his sources, Obama hasn't yet been briefed. But eventually, Obama will be briefed, and I think that there are kind of external forces acting here. I mean, there are kind of societal forces within the U.S. There are also international processes at work. I think, for example, the British, the French are releasing files. In particular, I was really interested in the British releasing that report by Milton Torres from 1956, I recall, where he was under orders to fire at a aircraft carrier-sized UFO, and that eventually he was debriefed and told not to talk about this. So, and that the British released that file, and I thought that was very interesting that they would do that. To me, that would signal that there are probably factions within the control system, and that there's probably a more progressive faction that wants to get the information out or prepare the public. And so I think that if the British are releasing files that are kind of very accurate in terms of, you know, what the policy is, then that will force those within the U.S. to kind of like reciprocate, or at least not be made to look as though they're trying to hide things.
So do you agree then with Bassett that if the U.S. doesn't go ahead and spill the beans, that other governments will and tell the world that our government knows all about it, they're just lying to the American public?
I think they'll do it in tandem. I can't imagine the U.S. just being made to look foolish in terms of other governments announcing it and the U.S. saying no, especially with Obama in place. I think he is someone that genuinely does want to change the way policies have been made and just kind of restore a sense of confidence in the U.S. government. I think that Obama is very aware that there is a kind of legitimacy crisis in a sense. Fewer and fewer people now trust the U.S. government than ever before. And I think that Obama's role is to kind of help restore faith in the U.S. government. And so that's not going to happen if you have other governments disclosing information about UFOs and extraterrestrial life and the Obama administration denying it. So I think eventually there'll be a kind of, they'll work in tandem. And if the Obama administration kind of follows the lead of other countries, nevertheless, you'll still eventually have disclosure. So I think we are moving towards that.
Here's the trouble I have with it, Michael. From a practical political standpoint, is that our country's a mess, and there's so much stuff for President Obama to do. The economy's a mess. I just can't imagine him coming out in this environment and saying something about UFOs. Either it would be seen as a diversion tactic. People would wonder if he's crazy. I can't imagine that it would help the financial markets to stabilize or make people more confident in their future. So make the case that it would make sense for him to come out with something like this sometime in, say, the next year.
Well, I think he would probably come out with something that would directly impact people's lives. And I'm thinking something like anti-gravity technology. That's something that would have a measurable impact because, I mean, if you all of a sudden had this, whether it's anti-gravity or free energy, something that would enable the to revolutionize the energy sector and to basically give a great stimulus to the car industry and to the aviation industry. These would be things that would directly impact on people's lives. Especially when it comes to anti-gravity, if you had anti-gravity technology released, it would basically allow transportation around the planet to kind of be much more rapid. It would enable more people to have access to trade goods and services.
I think it would do great things for the economy, and that is probably one way in which Obama can move forward in releasing some of these technologies. And I think it's very important that he has his national security advisor Jim Jones was in charge before he took his present position. He was the president of the Institute for 21st Century Energy, and he also did a stint as director of the Boeing Corporation at the very same time as Boeing was involved in an effort to try to release anti-gravity technology for commercial application. Apparently, Boeing were rebuffed in those efforts, and Jones was on the board of directors of Boeing at that time. And so I think it's interesting that now he's Obama's national security advisor, and he has that kind of background. So I would actually predict if there's going to be a disclosure, anything that Obama would do towards disclosure would begin with kind of anti-gravity, new energy.
Well, I remember Boeing making an announcement about its interest in anti-gravity technology. I just have never seen anything that said that they mastered it or conquered it. You're right. I mean, releasing some news about anti-gravity technology, if we had it, that'd be great. But heck, I don't know. It would seem to me that President Obama, as he's announcing this, would also have to explain, yeah, we've had it a long time and we've been sitting on it, which would be pretty tough politically.
Well, yeah, I think, they could always use the national security argument that releasing these technologies earlier would have raised very difficult national security issues, and now's the time to do it. But I think also there probably was a concern some time ago that the release of these technologies would cause the collapse of the financial system or the energy industry. But I guess with the current economic climate, that concern doesn't weigh as much now. So I think we're probably more likely to move ahead. As far as Boeing is concerned, I think there are... It's interesting that Boeing did studies on anti-gravity technology and... publicly, and the open source literature was that that this was interesting technology. Once it was mastered, they could do some great things in terms of the aviation sector. But Dr. Paul LaViolette has just come out with a book called Anti-Gravity, and there he quotes some sources that Boeing actually had done some classified work on anti-gravity where this was mastered, and they wanted to release it for commercial application, but they were rebuffed.
You mentioned about these foreign governments and a couple of examples of release of files, the British MOD files, and the French have come out with some stuff. And you've got Paul Hellyer, your colleague from Canada, who's been making public statements. Is it your guess that this is orchestrated, that it's a part of the dribbling out process? Because I've also heard the opposite, sort of an opposite, from people who say, look, the stuff that the British are putting out are the equivalent of the Blue Book files, which the U.S. government made public many years ago.
Well, I think, George, as you well know, that the way government bureaucracies fight against one another is to leak information. And so I think it's no different when we're looking at the kind of secret government or those different organizations that are ultimately responsible for the ET information. They leak information or they allow for people to come forward. I don't think it's an accident that Stephen Greer, for example, was able to get so many military whistleblowers to come forward to disclose what they knew about ET life and advanced anti-gravity technologies and so forth. I think it was because the U.S. military is largely behind the disclosure of this information, that they probably view themselves as having much more to gain because, after all, if you look at the conventional state of military technology, it's using kind of 19th century, 20th century principles. I mean, you still have kind of like jet fuel being used for aviation purposes. You still kind of artillery, gunpowder, all these things, whereas there are much more advanced technologies that could be used for the weapons industry. So that would give the defense industry various departments an incentive to kind of have this information come out because they feel that they could benefit from it. And I think that they also are frightened that if they don't have this information released, that at a certain time the U.S. military can be made redundant and basically incorporated into a kind of a new world order where the U.S. military no longer has the kind of global influence that it has today.
In the context of disclosure and using the example of Stephen Greer that you mentioned, I'll tell you this story. And I think there are political ramifications for any elected official who touches this topic with a 10-foot pole, and the example is Greer. There was a deal in the works, and I was privy to this information. Two congressional committee chairmen had agreed to hold hearings on UFOs 7-8 years ago, and they were going to keep it in a very limited framework, national security cases and cases that involve airline security, near misses, things of that sort. Greer held his news conference there in Washington and made a big stink and a big public display and talked about the hidden energy technology, and these guys in reaction shut it down. They killed the agreement that they had to hold hearings. They thought that it would be turned into a circus by the likes of Greer or others who would demand entrance into any kind of hearings, that it would be people in funny hats and alien antenna and things of that sort, and so they killed it. I mean, because they realized that there are political ramifications for opening up that box.
Well, yeah, there are huge ramifications. I mean, it would really make people who have been involved in this issue for decades and not released the information or been a party to some of the processes that have been used to kind of keep this secret. I mean, it would expose them. I'm not sure exactly what happened in terms of the relationship between Stephen Greer's disclosure project press conference and that kind of congressional initiative. I know that there have been all sorts of kind of stories and about things being kind of sabotaged because people didn't work in tandem. I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't kind of involved in this field at that time. It was only after the press conference that I got interested. But certainly, I think Greer, he was successful because he had certain factions or groups supporting him, and that's why he had so many military whistleblowers willing to come forward.
Well, I guess there are those in the UFO field who would certainly disagree with you on how successful he's been, but you're right. I mean, those witnesses he came forward were solid guys, not only military, but that FAA guy who had testimony about cases and files and things of that sort that he had seen. They were very impressive.
Right, the John Callahan case, that was the 1986 Alaska case. I think that was really an amazing case, and that kind of like shows just the processes that were involved in keeping this information under wraps. That he investigated the incident, and then he was called to Washington to basically do a briefing to various intelligence agencies, and they took all the information, all the data. They swore everyone to secrecy, and told them that the meeting never happened and to go away. But luckily, Callahan had kind of copies that he kept in his office and never turned them over, and he was able to kind of present that at the Disclosure Project press conference.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Sala about disclosure, confirmation, exopolitics. Got a lot of ground to still cover, including, has our government signed treaties with some other intelligence that basically outlines the kind of working relationship we're going to have now? And